Welcome to Climate Matters. I am Peter Savio, and I am here with Jessica Otney-Mahar. We are here to talk about the Nature Conservancy and its role and activities in terms of climate and clean energy policy. So welcome again, Jessica.
Thank you. Thanks again for having me.
Absolutely. Great to have you. So we spoke last time about the range of activities of the Nature Conservancy that have extended far beyond action in a single state, founded here in New York, to broader issues geographically, as well as broader issues on a policy platform. I wonder if we could drill a little bit further on when did the Nature Conservancy become more involved in climate policies, and what was the impetus for that?
You know, I think several years ago, or more than a decade ago, is the answer to that question. I think in one bucket, I would say we've been working on climate policy for quite a long time. And then I think, you know, what science is showing us is that, you know, no matter how much habitat we protect, whether it's, you know, conservation of lands and waters, or working with landowners or ranchers, no matter what we're doing, it's still going to be impacted by climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we have realized over the course of the last 60 years of implementing our mission is that we can't accomplish our goals and our mission if we don't tackle climate change. So now it's become pretty central to us as an organization worldwide, and certainly here in New York.
So the implications of climate change have been evident, but are increasingly evident, and as a result, the organization and its mission can help but be engaged.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we also, we took a look as an organization globally to assess what are the most significant threats facing people and nature worldwide, and there are a lot of them. And then we thought about, what are the threats that the Nature Conservancy can really make an impact in addressing, both through our own work and through work with partners? And through that assessment, we have really kind of honed our goals and our focus over the last about 4 years, and have been thinking about how we can bring the resources that all of our programs across the world, and then here in the U.S. nationally, can marshal to drive towards those shared goals,
mm-hmm.
and really working to make sure that we're all rowing in the same direction. And that's been really exciting and really important. And I think on an issue like climate change, you know, making that commitment and then really focusing in on what material changes and measurable impacts can we as an organization of our size have has been really important. And it's exciting to be working with colleagues from around the country and hearing about what they've been achieving in their states, and sharing what we're working to achieve in New York State.
Yep. So in terms of the New York State achievements, you had mentioned the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act having passed both the Assembly and the Senate, waiting, hasn't yet, as I understand,
not yet.
Been delivered to the governor. So can you walk through a little bit of the history of, as I understand it, there were a half dozen different climate legislation proposals offered last session. How did this one come to be the one that passed, and what was the difference now, since these bills have been proposed a number of times over the last 3, 4, 5 years?
Yeah. I think that first and foremost, politics changed, and the Nature Conservancy is strictly nonpartisan. But the reality of the situation here is that, you know, there was an election and the political dynamics in New York changed. So that created an opportunity. And one of the issues that the majority in both houses of the state legislature that took over on January 1st said that they wanted to address was climate change. So that was kind of the foundational opportunity that everyone was working off of. There was a coalition called New York Renews that worked with the legislature to introduce the Community and Climate Protection Act a number of years ago. And that coalition, which was significant and important, created a very strong grassroots presence that created the pressure around the need to act on climate in mm-hmm. Albany. And that was incredibly important. And from there, I think, you know, that's where that was a launching off point. In the 2019 State of the State, we saw Governor Cuomo propose legislation in the budget out of that called the Climate Leadership Act. So then you had a competing proposal that was not enacted in the budget. So then we had two pieces of legislation to start talking about. And as you're hearing the names of all these bills, I'm sure you can imagine after you said the final name, the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, they created a climate for a negotiation. Mm-hmm. And out of that negotiation came legislation that took elements of both of those bills, the Community and Climate Protection Act and the Climate Leadership Act, and we ended up with the bill that was finally passed in both houses. So it was not an easy negotiation, and everyone had to move off of their original position. But what's incredibly exciting is we got it done, and it's the most aggressive climate change legislation that's been passed in the United States. And so we're very proud of the fact that New York has that marker out there. And now it's time to get to work and start making the reality happen in communities across the state.
Yes, absolutely. So congratulations on the progress and the efforts of the Nature Conservancy and many others to get this across the
many
finish line
others,
to
yes.
support these efforts and to provide the advocacy. Just stepping back, there seems to be a number of perceptions in the media and among the different advocates as to whether or not this act, as passed by both houses, watered down the initial bill as proposed by Assemblyman Engelbreit, or whether it actually updated and strengthened that bill and offers some more promise that it's achievable. What's the Nature Conservancy's perspective in terms of how is this bill a strong and effective bill?
It's certainly a strong bill. And, you know, I think that when you have a large constituency that's been advocating for a specific bill for a number of years, when you make a change to that bill, obviously there are going to be, you know, concerns about that, rightly so. And when you're working to get legislation passed by people with differing viewpoints, changes sometimes need to be made. With all that being said, I think that the final bill has even stronger renewable energy goals. I think that it makes very strong commitments to a net zero carbon economy. We are the only state that's legislated that. So just remember, it's not signed into law yet. So we really right. want that to happen first and foremost. But again, we do believe that this is one of the strongest bills in the country. I have no doubt that because it's a bill that looks out to 2050, and we can't even imagine the world mm-hmm. that far ahead, that there will be changes that will need to be made over the years as we work towards implementation. And I have no doubt that we'll be revisiting this with additional legislation, you know, over the next few decades. But at the outset, I think it's incredibly exciting that we're getting started. And I think now our mandate is really to go from where we are today to where this bill envisions, which is an incredible amount of change that this bill is going to demand from New Yorkers.
Absolutely. And so much credit goes to not only the advocacy organizations such as the Nature Conservancy, but also to Assemblymember Engelbreit.
Absolutely.
For being so steady and consistent and caring with public hearings on this and keeping the momentum, and as well as Senator Kaminsky in terms of his leadership in bringing this home and being so thoughtful about a number of the practical issues to make sure that it's achievable, as well as Governor Cuomo and his staff, quite an impressive achievement to, as you say, bring about nation-leading legislation on climate. So what are the next steps? just a little teaser here, and then we'll cover it in greater depth.
Really broadly, the bill sets out two things. The first thing is the goals. So it creates a series of goals around clean energy and economy-wide goals for decarbonizing. And it sets up a governance structure. So there are a number of, there's a Climate Action Council, a 22-member Climate Action Council, and a number of different groups that work within or alongside that Climate Action Council mm-hmm. that will be there to create a scoping plan in the first instance to talk about how we're going to achieve all of those ambitious goals, and then also deal with a number of issues related to things like how we're going to tackle different sectors of our economy, transportation, different energy-intensive trade-exposed industries, buildings, agriculture and forestry. So it sets up a dialogue to think about how we address reducing emissions in each of those sectors.
Great. Wonderful summary of the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act. We're here with Jessica Otney-Mahar of the Nature Conservancy. And we greatly appreciate your being here today.
Thank you for having me.